It's the Locked On Podcast Network. Local experts on the biggest stories.
You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Locked On Vikings on the Locked On Podcast Network, a brand new week here in Minneapolis. My name's Sam Ekstrom, Vikings beat writer, zonecoverage.com, joined by former quarterback Sage Rosenfels. We're going to play a little catch-up today, talk about the stuff Sage has missed while he's been on spring break vacation, and get into some NFL headlines perhaps as well. But Sage, welcome back to the show. It's been a while. I assume you've been enjoying the sun, getting a tan, maybe a little sunburn, warming up after a long winter.
Yes, a little Costa Rica, and on the way home, I stopped in Miami for a couple days, and it was great. It was nice to get out and get some sun. It was nice to walk to breakfast in some sandals for the last week and a half or so. And but I'm ready to get home and ready to get back after it. So I'm ready to see what the Vikings are going to do with this draft. I'm very curious. You know, we've gone through the majority of free agency. Obviously, there's still players that will be signed and available, and players in the next few weeks will be coming back into the facility and working out, and the OTAs and all that stuff will be starting up before we know it. But the draft is going to be interesting because there are still some holes on this Vikings roster that need to be filled, and I think the draft will be a good spot for those players.
Yep, and with all the money they're spending on some of their players on the roster, they're going to need to draft well to get some of those players on the roster at low salaries. Let me backtrack and run by some of the moves that happened while you were gone and just get your opinions on them, starting with, and this goes back about 10 days now, I guess, Sheldon Richardson, the big defensive tackle from Seattle. He comes to Minnesota, and Minnesota loses two defensive tackles to Seattle. Tom Johnson, the guy who played next to Linval Joseph, and then Shamar Stephan, sort of the reserve third defensive tackle. He goes to Seattle as well, but the Vikings get the grand prize with Sheldon Richardson. What kind of impact do you think that's going to have?
Well, he's a better player. I mean, you have to have depth at that position. I firmly believe that. You have to have three really good, good interior linemen. And I think right now they have two, with Joseph and Richardson, and they have to get, have another guy or two in there to give those guys a break. But, he is a premier player. When he was with the Jets, he was one of the better interior D linemen in the league. Obviously, ended up going to Seattle, and then now he's a Viking. So that was a big move. Another really strong move by Rick Spielman and the crew. Obviously, when you go after one guy, you got to give up some other guys, but I think they improved their roster with the pickup of Sheldon Richardson.
While we're talking about defensive tackles, let me revisit one of the things that came up over the weekend. Sharif Floyd. Do you remember Sharif Floyd, the one-time promising starter for the Minnesota Vikings who's now missed essentially 2 years as a result of a surgical mishap that basically left him without strength in his quad? He's been very quiet, all quiet on the Sharif Floyd front for a while now, but he popped up again on Instagram posting a mashup of quotes basically from Mike Zimmer sort of dissing Floyd for his ability to get back on the field. And I think at the time people thought, well, Floyd's not putting in the effort and Zimmer's very frustrated with him. Then it comes out that Floyd actually has been dealing with something much more serious. He doesn't have strength in his quad. The nerves are shot. And Floyd posts a very emotional post on Instagram, and I'll read a clip of it here. Quote, "I've been down, hurt, lost, confused, scared, and fighting when there's nothing left to fight for. Believing in myself and constantly keeping my kids close to my heart through it all. Just when I thought it couldn't get any worse. Everyone who has claimed to love me has walked away, left when the weights got heavy." And there's more to it than that. But, I mean, this guy seems to be very hurt and very betrayed, I guess, by the way the Vikings treated him. And I know that he's got a grievance with the team trying to get the remaining part of his rookie salary. What do you make of the whole situation? And is it a lesson that coaches need to be careful when talking about a player's rehab?
Well, my guess in this situation is that Mike Zimmer, didn't know, not necessarily the extent of the injury. Obviously, he knew he had an injury. But you just sort of assume, the head coaches get, and all coaches get some sort of timeline, from trainers, from doctors. If somebody has a surgery, he's going to be back in a month, or it's going to be 6 months, or whatever it's going to be. And obviously, in this situation, I would assume that Zimmer, was told that, by now, Sharif Floyd should be healthy or fairly healthy, or he should be at 90%. And he wasn't there. And he wasn't playing at that level. He wasn't practicing and all these types of things. So probably frustrating for Mike Zimmer. My guess is that he did not know the surgery, wasn't conducted properly, or didn't go well, or the healing process didn't go well, or whatever. And that really wasn't Sharif Floyd's fault. And my guess is that there's probably more behind that, Zimmer's quotes. I remember these quotes. We talked about them, a couple of years ago. We talked about Zimmer's trying to light a fire underneath Sharif Floyd. My guess is there is a history there, maybe even before the injury, that maybe he wasn't a really hard worker, or he didn't always practice. If he was slightly injured, those types of things. And so, I think there's probably more there to the story than obviously than one Instagram post. There's always two sides to the story, or three sides to the story type of thing. But, it is too bad. And that should, you see in the Sharif Floyd situation, sort of the fine line between really being an NFL superstar or an NFL player and being completely out of the league and just done. And that's the way it goes. And that's why, difference between like baseball or basketball, the injuries that pile up in football so quickly, in every single game, it's so violent that, the difference between making, $10 million a year and being completely out of the league is really, really small. And that looks like that's what's happened to Sharif Floyd.
And probably a lesson too, that when you read the words, so-and-so underwent successful surgery, you probably have to take it with a grain of salt, because that's the go-to line. There was never an unsuccessful surgery. But I'm sure that with so many guys going under the knife, I'm sure that not every surgery is the same. Yes, they're getting the best care, but there probably are cases where maybe the work wasn't done quite as well as it could have been done, and that could maybe also affect rehab time. I'm not a doctor. I don't know. But this probably isn't the only time when somebody has been set back by a surgical procedure that was allegedly going to be routine.
Well, that happens all the time, actually, and surgeons make mistakes, and also surgeons do things exactly right. It's a practice. It's not an exact science, and there's scar tissue. There's all sorts of things that happen. Tears are different, obviously, in his situation, things didn't go well. And that's always the risk. But every time these guys go for surgery, and we really take it for granted at this point. So and so is going in for a small scope, or so and so is going in for a surgery. Yeah, he'll be back. I mean, we almost take the emotional aspect out of it. I mean, somebody is going under; they're being cut into. Infections happen. All these things, all these risks occur when you go in for surgery. And most of the time, they go right. 95% of the time, or so, or maybe higher. Things go right and the player comes back, healthy. But occasionally it doesn't work out, and this is one of those situations.
Let's switch gears to the offensive line here with the Vikings. Now, this is really the one area where the Vikings didn't exactly make a splash in free agency. Now, they did sign Tom Compton as sort of a swingman last week, but you could say that the Vikings don't have a fifth starter on the offensive line right now, because Joe Berger retires, and we should probably owe Joe Berger, because I know that Joe, and Joe's a great guy, and Joe's calling it quits after a very bountiful career, but it does leave a gap on the Vikings line. Now, I think the beauty of the situation is that the Vikings line has such good flexibility. Like, a lot of their guards can play center, the centers can play guard, the guards can play some tackle, so I don't know if they necessarily have a certain position on the line where they need to draft. They just need to draft a lineman. And then if they draft tackle, move Remmers to guard. If they draft center, maybe Elflein can play guard. You know, there's a lot of flexibility there. But where do you think the Vikings should go on the offensive line? And do you think they should go offensive line with the first round pick?
You know, I'm not sure. I definitely hope they go offensive line in the first couple picks, first two or three picks early in the draft. You know, I don't just draft a guy in the sixth or seventh round. I like drafting offensive linemen early. And the Vikings have had a lot of success drafting other types of players, you know, guys like Stephon Diggs and you know, the receiver types later in the draft. So I like going O-line early. You know, there's always injuries at that position. And that was, you know, just very recently before last year, a huge weakness, the biggest weakness on this football team. So I think you continue to try to make that better. Keep building those lines. You've got your quarterback, you've got receivers under contract, you've got, a really strong defense. Keep improving that offensive line for the future. And also if you draft a couple guys now, you know, that might make, you know, some of these expensive offensive linemen that they have, you know, maybe in 2 years at their contracts, you know, maybe the Vikings don't want to pay those big contracts because they've really drafted well with some young guys that are much, much cheaper. And so, I like going early offensive lineman where it's guard, tackle. Doesn't really matter to me. I think Tony Soprano's done a nice job there in his 2 years as the offensive line coach. And it's a position that you can never take for granted, because if you have no offensive line, just giving Kirk Cousins all that money is a complete waste of time.
Yep, they're going to need to add some depth there, because they not only did they lose Berger to retirement, they also lost Jeremiah Searles to the Panthers. He was sort of the sixth man last year, so that there are gaps to fill in on the defensive line and the offensive line, the trenches, where the Vikings need to get a little bit deeper. How about a special teams player, Marcus Sherrills? He is still at large, still on the market. I think the Vikings would be fools to let him go. I really do. Sherrills is still so reliable. I don't think he really showed a whole lot of rust last year, even though he didn't have a return touchdown. I still think that he's a great gunner on the other side of special teams, rarely makes a mistake. I don't know why you would let him go. It's not like he's going to be that expensive unless they think that he's taking up a roster spot because he doesn't really play too much cornerback. I can't see why you would not re-sign Marcus Sherrills.
Yeah, I think Sherrills will be back. I think the Vikings are just they probably assume they can get him for the veteran minimum, and they're just going to wait it out and take their time. There's not a hurry, and you know, obviously another team could come in and swoop him up, but hasn't happened yet. So my guess is he will be back. This seems to happen every year. There's these, you know, veteran players who are sort of under the radar, and you know, they end up getting signed, you know, a month or even 2 months after free agency starts. And the nice thing about Sherrills is, you know, it doesn't even matter if he really misses anything. I mean, he knows this defense, he knows all the special teams. You know, he can step right in and shoot, you know, week one of the regular season and do a good job. So, I sort of think he'll be back with the Vikings. And I don't know. I mean, if another team comes and offers him a contract, I think that'd be great for Sherrills, but for some reason I just don't think it's going to happen. It's one of those things where I think the team that he's been on, the Vikings, knows his value more than all the other teams around the NFL.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Robinson's the only Viking that's been there longer than Sherrills. 8 seasons for Sherrills, that's tied with Griffin. Robinson's obviously like, you know, 12 years, but I can't think of anybody else who's been there longer. That's insane to have.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Right when I was, you know, Sherrills came in, I feel like, right when I was sort of leaving there, and Everson Griffin were sort of around the same time. Obviously, Robinson had been there, you know, before, but, you know, pretty good run for these undrafted. It's amazing. That's these undrafted guys, and with good coaching and guys that do a good job. You know, they can stay in the league for a long, long time. I would like to touch on Joe Berger, by the way. I'm not sure if we've ever really discussed him. I believe it was 2005. I had signed back with the Miami Dolphins, and Nick Saban was our head coach. And the regular season starts. And it's one of those deals where, you know, you have your cuts and all that stuff at the end of the preseason. And then, you know, first week of the regular season, all of a sudden you sign a couple guys off of somebody else's, you know, team that got cut, or you sign someone else up to somebody's practice squad. You know, the roster changes there in that last weekend after that Thursday preseason game. So, you know, we've got this Monday practice, and we've got this new center, this kid Joe Berger from Michigan Tech. I never even heard of the school before, and And he was my center as the backup quarterback, and he was the number two center, and got to know him right away. And I feel like we're like right after practice, we went in and, you know, had lunch and sat next to him, and I was like, man, what a smart guy and what a nice guy. And you could tell, like, just a sort of a small town, you know, Midwestern kid, and you know, really, really mature for his age, and just incredible that a guy from such a small school could play for such a long time in the NFL. And, you know, he bounced around a little bit early, but really made a nice career for himself in Minnesota. Really a perfect place for him. He's sort of like a Klein Saucer, you know, type of player. Uh-huh. That, you know, guy that just fit, you know, the North and Minneapolis and the Vikings. You know, just sort of a perfect fit all around in every way possible.
Yeah, he kind of looked like Klein Saucer a little bit too. Kind of had the same build, you know. And Klein Saucer came from UND, North Dakota, and Berger came from Michigan Tech. I assume that's Division II.
Division II, and it's in the UP, by the way. It's up in the UP
in Houghton, Houghton, Michigan.
Yeah, I'm not even sure how you get there. You got to take a ferry or you drive around. I'm not sure.
That's great. Yeah, Berger, and he left with something left in the tank too. Like, he was probably their on average their steadiest lineman for the last 3 or 4 years, and I think he probably could have played more, but sometimes when you have your health, just hang it up while it's still good before you get that last nasty concussion or a devastating knee injury. I think he was probably the smartest among us to hang it up at this point.
That's right, and I don't know what, you know, I don't know what the number is that he's made so far. You know, I was lucky. You know, if you've made, say, you know, $30 million or $25 million in his career, and I don't know what that number is for him. And then you look at it and you're like, I'm basically being offered minimums, $1 million, $1.5 million, and after tackling $1.5 million 1 year contract after tax is going to get under $1 million, and you already got, you know, 18 in the bank. It's sometimes that's hard to go out and put your body, you beat up your body the way they do. And the older you are, you know, the harder it is to recover, the more painful things are, and you're just sort of losing your strength a little bit every year. I've seen it. When I was at the Giants, Richie Soibert was this veteran guard/center that we had from Western Illinois, another small school guy, sort of like a Berger type of situation, really, really smart, crafty. You never got the huge, huge contracts, but a really good player. We're actually in our last game of the season at Washington, a Week 17 game. He's having a great year. Terrible conditions, muddy, sloppy, had rained a little bit. I think it snowed a little bit, just nasty. And late in that game, I believe like middle to late third quarter, he sticks his foot in the ground, his foot slides, and somebody falls on him, blows his knee out. Not only just didn't play again, but, you know, really, really screwed up his knee and had to have major surgeries on that. I think multiple surgeries, you know, on that knee. And that's not the way you want to, you know, go out. You don't want to retire that way. That's extremely depressing to be rehabbing when you're retired. And really nothing to, you know, you sort of be motivating you to get back onto the field. It's hard to retire and when to be all done with football after all years of college and, you know, over a dozen years in the league or so, and to be out and not be in the locker room and not be a part of the whole thing. It's much, much worse if you're dealing with a major, major, you know, knee injury or concussion or some sort of physical thing. So I always think it's best to retire if you've made enough and you feel like you've got out of your career what you want to get out of it. It's always better to retire early than retire late.
And I think Joe Berger has a big family to enjoy now, so I'm sure he'll stay busy with the family, running around, chasing the kids. 13-year career, pretty good. Last one of the day. I'm reading a headline now that says Josh Allen showing off his 80-yard throws at his pro day. What was the longest that Sage Rosenfels could touch on in his prime? I know you got a big arm. Could you get up to 80?
No, not even close. I think in college we had a throwing contest one time. I threw about 67 yards or something like that. And there's probably even like a little wind at my back or something. I could not throw the ball really, really. I didn't have a huge arm like that. I really do think that Josh Allen is the most interesting prospect amongst these four quarterbacks or five quarterbacks that people are talking about. I've seen him play enough I've seen just his athleticism, and he is extremely talented and athletic. He's got the biggest arm. He's got a huge arm. Everyone always talks about his accuracy. That's an issue. He's the guy that has the highest ceiling. And it's one of those deals. If you're going to go for sort of for the home run, it's Josh Allen. If you want to go for the singles and doubles, I think that's where you go with guys like, Josh Rosen and Baker Mayfield. You just have no idea. Obviously everyone likes, Sam Darnold as well. But I think Josh Allen's got the highest ceiling of all the guys.
Draft 1 month from today. We'll start zoning in on that as the weeks go on. Sage, welcome back to the Midwest, and we'll talk to you again later this week.
Sounds great. Looking forward to it.
He's Sage Rosenfels, the former QB. I'm Sam Ekstrom from zonecoverage.com on Twitter, at Sage Rosenfels 18, and at Sam Ekstrom to follow along with information and links to the show. We appreciate everybody listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.